This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
They are mobilizing against the state, and they are also sending false information to the world against the state. And when you look at the Rioters Act, it speaks clearly on that. When you do that, you are a treasonous person.
That's African Transformation Movement spokesperson Zamun Chona accusing Afrikaner organizations spreading lies about South Africa and the U.S. Capitol. Details coming up also. Arab countries have stepped up their efforts in response to President Donald Trump's plan for Gaza. And health authorities in Guinea are cracking down on sales of fake medications. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Arab countries have stepped up their efforts in response to President Donald Trump's plan for Gaza, which envisions U.S. control over Gaza and the permanent displacement of Palestinians to Egypt, Jordan, and other countries. The Trump proposal, led by the convening of an emergency Arab summit this week, resulting in an alternative plan for Gaza, one that would reconstruct Gaza while keeping Palestinians on their land. Ambassador Ayman Zain al-Din, a former director of the media department at the Egyptian Foreign Ministry, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohammed al-Shenawi what objectives the Arab states could achieve from this plan.
The immediate objective would be, of course, to deal with the humanitarian crisis and the current situation in Gaza after the massive war that Israel launched on the Strip. So dealing with it, meaning finding shelter for the people, ensuring that reconstruction would start as soon as possible and done in a way that ensures long-term viability for the population. But the equally important objective of the plan is to bring back the Palestinian question to the proper path, which is finding a final settlement to the Palestinian question by allowing the Palestinians to exercise the right to self-determination and living in freedom in their own country. And this is the main objective of the process, because this cause has been there for too long, and its impact on the region's stability and security has been massive. And unless Israel and the countries of the region and the international community realize that there is no way out of this continuous chain of conflict, is by solving finally once and for all the Palestinian problem and giving the Palestinians the right to self-determination and liberty.
The reconstruction plan would cost over $50 billion. Are the Arab countries ready to invest the necessary financial and political capital to achieve that plan?
This is a very important question. The Arab countries have indicated publicly and officially that they are willing to carry the burden, their share of the burden in reconstructing Gaza. But this is a collective effort. A collective effort, first, to ensure that the conditions for reconstruction are in place, i.e. that Israel should refrain from attacking Gaza once again, that Israel would accept that Gaza is Palestinian territory, that the Palestinians have rights to live there in peace and security. And then the international community should also share the burden of reconstruction in Gaza, but also Israel should pay part of the burden, because what has happened in Gaza is to a great extent caused by what Israel did. But back to your initial question, no, of course, the Arab countries are willing and determined to share their burden in doing that and help the Palestinians in their reconstruction, and also do the political part of it, working to convince and to pressure the international community to help financially, diplomatically, and politically in making sure that the reconstruction of Gaza is carried away, and that Israel should fulfill its obligations, starting from the obligations of the current ceasefire that Israel now is trying to sabotage by reneging on the commitments it made in the agreement that has been reached for the ceasefire, and by which Israel was able to get back many of its citizens that were taken as hostages in Gaza, but now is trying to avoid making good on its commitments. And that is an important part of what should be done for the reconstruction and peaceful path in the region.
That's Ambassador Ayman Zain al-Din, former director of the media department at the Egyptian Foreign Ministry. He spoke to VOA's Mohamed al-Shenawi. In South Africa, police are investigating charges of high treason against some Afrikaner organizations that met with officials from President Donald Trump's administration last week. During their visit to Washington, D.C., the Afri Forum and solidarity groups alleged the South African government is persecuting white Afrikaners. Darren Taylor explains.
The Afrikaner organizations visited the United States Capitol after President Donald Trump signed an executive order freezing aid to South Africa. The U.S. leader said Pretoria is discriminating against white Afrikaners, which it denies. Trump's order also said Afrikaners could apply for refugee status in America to escape alleged persecution. In Washington, AfriForum and Solidarity told the president's representatives that affirmative action and black economic empowerment policies are reverse racism. They said President Cyril Ramaphosa's African National Congress, the ANC, recently passed laws to deny mother tongue education to Afrikaners and to confiscate land from white farmers. Pretoria says it won't expropriate land without paying for it, but that some legislation is necessary to make South Africa more equal following decades of apartheid. One of the parties that pushed for an investigation into the Afrikaner groups is the African Transformation Movement, the ATM. Spokesperson Zama Nchona accuses AfriForum and Solidarity of presenting a campaign of lies about South Africa in the U.S. Capitol.
They are mobilizing against the state, and they are also sending false information to the world against the state. And when you look at the Rioters Act, it speaks clearly on that. When you do that, you are a treasonous person. This is why we believe that they have to be subjected to the laws of this country because they are mobilizing.
In a recorded statement to the media, AfriForum Chief Executive Officer Kali Krill said his organization isn't worried about the allegations.
I will not be having any sleepless nights over this, as these complaints are baseless. If the state, however, goes ahead with this, it will make us stronger. It will confirm the point that there are ANC leaders that are abusing their power to govern against certain sections of the population. If AfriForum has to be in court, it would of course also give us a platform to show the world how the ANC leaders are acting against the interest of the country. They are disloyal. AfriForum, Solidarity and the Solidarity Movement are loyal because we are fighting in the interest of the South African people.
Political analyst Mondli Makanya says some Afrikaner organizations see the Trump administration as an ally, as it has condemned regulations aimed at achieving diversity, equity and inclusion in government and employment. Like the Trump administration, AfriForum and Solidarity say they want societies to be based on merit, not on what they consider to be laws that favor certain groups of people over others. Makanya says the Afrikaner organizations see an opportunity to ask the Trump administration to advance their interests, but that in itself isn't treasonous.
They are not just conservative, they're actually openly racist, and they want an enclave that only belongs to Afrikaners. And they've become extremely powerful. They do a lot of quality work, doing charity in the Afrikaans community mainly. They do lobbying on behalf of the language and they defend people in court. So they've developed a lot of legitimacy in the Afrikaans community, basically creating a narrative that the Afrikaner person is not welcome in a unitary democratic South Africa.
Lawyers told VOA it's unlikely treason charges will be pursued against the Afrikaner organizations because they're pushing for changes to laws, not to overthrow the state. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The United Nations has released $110 million for an emergency fund to help neglected crises around the world, including Sudan and six other African countries, after donors such as the United States ordered major cuts. The UN forecasts that funding levels, which were dwindling long before U.S. President Donald Trump ordered foreign aid frozen in January, are projected to drop to a record low this year. The Trump administration announced last month it was canceling nearly 10,000 foreign aid grants and contracts worth almost $60 billion. Other donors, like Britain, have also announced cuts as countries face growing pressure to boost defense spending. The UN is seeking $45 billion in 2025 to help around 185 million people fleeing conflict and battling starvation. So far, it has received just 5% of this. According to the UN, the money from the Central Emergency Response Fund will go towards underfunded and neglected crises across Africa, Asia, and Latin America. Around a third of the money will go to support Sudan, where nearly 2 years of civil war have triggered a huge displacement of people and a hunger crisis, and neighboring Chad, which has taken in more than 1 million Sudanese refugees. Other recipients include Afghanistan, Central African Republic, Niger, and Somalia. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. We'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. In South Sudan, members of the leading opposition group are increasing alarm over arrests of their leaders. The officer of First Vice President Riek Machar has confirmed that the National Minister of Peacebuilding, Stephen Paul Cole, was arrested today along with his bodyguards and his secretary in his office. Foreign diplomats in Juba and regional analysts say there are concerns the arrests and recent violence in Upper Nile State threaten a peace deal that ended the country's five-year civil war. General Gabriel Duop Lam was arrested earlier this week, along with other senior officials of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in Opposition, or SPLMIO. The detainees are all allies of Vice President Riek Machar, whose rift with President Salva Kiir sparked a devastating war in 2013. This morning, Machar's spokesperson said the SPLMIO did not know how their officials were or where they were being held. President Salva Kiir has insisted that South Sudan will not return to war, and a government spokesperson, Michael Makwi, told reporters in the capital Juba that opposition figures were arrested because they were in conflict with the law. Some health workers displaced by the conflict in Sudan are offering their services at mobile health centers sponsored by the Sudanese American Physicians Association, or SAPA, a nonprofit founded by Sudan doctors in the United States. Dr. Musa Abubakar Ibrahim works at SAPA, a mobile clinic at the Imshugara IDP Camp B in Gadarif. He says the clinic faces challenges while offering services to thousands of Sudanese families who fled from Khartoum and Omdurman when conflict broke out in Khartoum on April 15, 2023.
We provide service for more than 200 patients per day. Just for patient visit our clinic. And also provide nutritional survey for patients inside camp and surrounding village.
And how many cases have you dealt with here that are quite severe, that needs a medical facility with modern technology, because here are just so, you know, basic.
Now the number of the patient is decreasing because most of the patients, they return back to their homes. Approximately about 15 to 20% of patients that need referral for further management that not provide here.
Where do you refer them to?
Most of the patients refer to the Al-Ghadarif Teaching Hospital and Al-Ghadarif Maternity Hospital.
And talk to me about the challenges here at this center, which is sponsored by the Sudanese American Physicians Association. So what are the challenges?
The challenges are changing with time. At the beginning of this clinic, the challenge that we faced us, which is the big number of patients that need urgent medical service, which is not provided at that time, and outbreaks of acute watery diarrhea.
Cholera.
Mm-hmm. And many pregnant ladies that need pregnancy service and care that not provide. But with collaboration with UNICEF and CAF organization and Ghadarif Ministry of Health, we overcame these challenges and move on.
If you had a better opportunity, would you still be here?
If I have better opportunity, I'm still here. Because there's many people that need medical service. We are not treating them up to now.
Why are you not treating them? Why?
There are many challenges that make them out of service. One of the problems, how to access the medical service. There are many people, they don't know how to access the medical service. And shortage of supply in some areas. We are working well with our collaboration with other organizations to solve this problem.
That is Dr. Musa Abubakar Ibrahim, a health worker at Imusha Gara Camp B in Ghadarif Jazira State, Sudan. He spoke to VOA's John Tanza in Ghadarif. Health authorities in Guinea are cracking down on the sale of fake medications, arresting several people and closing some stores. They say the trade in fake drugs contributes to health problems. Reporter Karim Kamara has more from Conakry.
Guinea's gendarmerie and police are conducting daily patrols to ensure that stores in Conakry's Madina market that specialize in the sale of illicit medicines remain closed. Authorities consider Madina, the country's biggest market, to be the center of illicit medicines trade in Guinea, storing, import, and distributing them to neighboring countries such as Sierra Leone, Mali, Mauritania, and Liberia. Officers accused Ori Jallo of being a wholesaler who distributes fake medicines. He disputes the accusation, saying his products are good and cheap.
Si ils disent que nous vendons les faux médicaments, pourquoi alors certains pharmaciens et docteurs viennent payer chez nous?
He says if they say we are selling fake medicines, why are some of the pharmacists and doctors buying from us? Jallo says it's just defamation and that all the medicines they are selling are good for human consumption. He says the goods the pharmacies are selling are more expensive. On the streets of Conakry, this is how people reacted to the news of the raids on drugs trailers. She says medicine in Madina are cheap and are helping people. She says the prices in the pharmacies are too costly.
Moi, je préfère payer mes médicaments à la pharmacie plutôt que d'aller acheter des faux médicaments à Madina.
He says he prefers buying his medication at the pharmacy rather than paying for fakes at Madina. He says he is encouraging the government to continue to target fake medicines in raids throughout the country. Dr. Radia Ba is the vice chairman of the Guinean Pharmacist Union. He says all the medicines at Madina are fake and denies allegations that pharmacies charge too much.
Mais aujourd'hui, Madina est fermée, mais on continue à trouver des bons médicaments dans les pharmacies.
He says Madina is closed today, but people are buying good medicines at the pharmacies. He says medications at the pharmacies are cheaper and easier to get. And he says you just need to seek a pharmacy in the sub-region, with about 70% of medicines sold in the country being illicit. In June 2002, 200 containers full of illicit medicines were seized at the Conakry seaport and several people were arrested. The trade goes on. However, as the Guinean government can't afford to supply all major towns and villages with medicines, The World Health Organization says the problem of counterfeit medications is found all over the world, but that low and middle-income countries are particularly vulnerable. In those countries, WHO says 10% of medications sold may be fake. The WHO says some fake medicines are ineffective, which means patients waste their money on them and illnesses may get worse. And others, WHO says, can be poisonous and potentially lethal. For VOA News, I am Karim Kamara in Conakry.
U.S. President Donald Trump brought up familiar arguments in his 100-minute speech to Congress. VOA's Carol Van Dam has more.
About 20 minutes into his address Tuesday night, President Trump listed examples of what he called appalling waste we have already identified. He noted funding for one program to a southern African nation, saying, quote, $8 million to promote LGBTQ+ in Lesotho, which nobody has heard of, end quote. The foreign minister of Lesotho told the Associated Press that Trump should speak for himself and found it surprising and disappointing that he claimed no one knows Lesotho. But Republican strategist Joseph Slavik tells VOA that he doesn't think President Trump meant to offend the small African kingdom.
We all like and love Lesotho. It's a great country. They have, by the way, a new ambassador, young man here in Washington, D.C., who I met recently. They're obviously trying to improve their own image. So I don't think in terms of trying to insult Lesotho, President Trump was trying to do that. But I think he was trying to make a point to the American people and to elected officials that, look, obviously LGBT and DEI issues are not going to be accepted. And that spending $8 million in a small country like Lesotho was a non-starter.
Samba Muzada is an assistant professor of political science at James Madison University in Virginia, who is from Zambia. She tells VOA that most of her students have no idea how many countries there are in Africa, much less where Lesotho is located.
Genuinely, most people in that place probably don't even know about the existence of Lesotho. And I'm going to tell you this as a person that has interacted with large populations in the U.S., when I ask most of my students, so how many countries do you think there are in Africa? I've had people tell me one, and some have said two or three. So to some extent, it is an acknowledgement of, you know, the lack of knowledge about other parts of the country that really exist.
Uzada took issue with President Trump's efforts to get rid of hundreds of thousands of federal workers. The president noted in his speech he imposed an immediate freeze on federal hiring and ordered all federal workers to return to the office. Uzada says employees nationwide are being affected by efforts to slash the number of federal workers.
Federal workers are all across the country, and they do a lot of amazing things, from ensuring that the fruits that we eat are safe. It's the federal workers that do that. Ensuring that, you know, the water we drink is safe, ensuring that the air quality is right. It's the federal workforce. So if people have this notion and thought that the federal workforce are in Washington, D.C., and yes, we're going to drain the swamp, we shouldn't forget the bigger picture. We might be doing a disservice to everybody else.
Asked how she would grade President Trump's overall speech in terms of whether he achieved what he set out to do, Muzada had this to say.
I think if we look at what he promised in his campaign and what he's been doing over the last few weeks that he's been in power and how he delivered the speech, that would definitely fall under the category of excellent. There is a consistent alignment between what he promised he would do in the campaign. There is a consistent alignment with what he has done over the last few weeks. It's been a shock.
Slavik also gives the president high marks for delivering on what he said he would do in his first days in office.
He basically had the chance to show the American people that what he promised during the campaign was starting in the first 100 days of his election.
Some Democratic lawmakers said Trump did not address Americans' economic concerns, including Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
One thing Donald Trump did not mention last night was a real serious plan to bring down costs, the number one thing Americans wanted to hear most. Instead, Donald Trump doubled down on his plans to send costs skyrocketing by starting a trade war with Canada and Mexico.
Many Democrats and other critics have said that Trump's cuts to federal agencies could also damage the economy and harm U.S. foreign relations. Even some of the president's Republican Party have expressed concern about some job cuts. Carol Van Dam for VOA News in Washington.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. Thanks for choosing The Voice of America.